Hi, welcome to this episode of ESG's Women in Cybersecurity. Today, I'm so thrilled to be here with Brittany Greenfield, who's the founder and CEO of Wobby. Brittany, so great to have you here.
Thanks so much, Melinda. It's great to be here. Real fan of the podcast. Looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks so much. And let's start with how you got into cybersecurity.
You know, it definitely was not a traditional path for me, which I actually find a lot of cybersecurity professionals have. I grew up in Washington, D.C. So for me, cybersecurity was always a little bit of a black box, you know, the three-letter agencies versus Russia, China, and probably some angsty teenager I dated. And I actually started my first half of my career in the ERP space. And I didn't get into cyber until I was working for Cisco, looking a lot at IoT. And as we all know on this show, you can't talk IoT and not talk cyber. And I realized cyber is just such a fundamental piece of the digital fabric that powers our lives today that I needed to get into it. I became very passionate about it, got into the endpoint space, looking at go-to-market strategy. And then I actually got very frustrated with the fact that we were so focused on perimeter security, which to me is tantamount to saying, hey, I have a home security system, but I wasn't bothering to ask the question of whether or not my front door was shut. Or did I have the right kind of lock on it? That's what led me into the realm of application security and eventually to found Wobby.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's my coverage space is application and cloud security. So I'm so thrilled that you have a company in this area. And you went to Duke for undergrad. What did you study and how do you use that? And then you can also be great to hear about you getting your MBA.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, not a traditional path. Duke actually has an amazing program called Program 2. Which is a self-designed interdisciplinary major. They put out for applications and accept a small percent of those that do. And I was really interested in how technology powers industry change. At the time, I happened to be looking at biotech, which nowadays, you know, is a normal thing. But I realized I really had a passion for, you know, harder enterprise technology and how it, whether it's coming from startups or internal innovation, it really pushes companies forward and pushes, you know, behavior change and everything and competitive landscape change. So that was really great to have that experience at Duke. I'm a very big Dukie. You would have seen me with my blue hair, this Final Four. you know, it definitely really sort of said, you know, you don't have to find a traditional path. You know, at the time that I got into the workforce, I had to explain to my friends what a startup was. I went and worked for an enterprise software startup. I also had to explain what the cloud was and that I was not working for the weather service back then. They were like, so you're doing software for the weather service? No. It's a program. It's in the cloud. 10 years. You'll get it. Just trust me on this. And, you know, that allowed me to have a really great journey early in my career, which eventually led me to my MBA at MIT Sloan. Which was a fantastic, that was the time that I got into cybersecurity, but I was certainly one of those people that's, I'm just coming out of college, I'm practically ready to go get my MBA. You know, 2 years out of the workforce is a big thing, it's a big commitment, and in some sense, a luxury to do that, to get to sit down and think and reflect on my experiences and my peers' experiences to say, how can I think about situations differently when I approach them in the future? And then that literally, like I said, was what led me down the path of cybersecurity because of my work with Cisco during the time.
Nice. Yeah, you don't always hear that. Going to business school made me think about getting into cybersecurity.
Right, exactly. But, you know, I think it's about being open to new opportunities. Somebody gave me great advice at the time. They're like, look, you know what you want to do directionally. So don't box yourself into it. Hey, this is part of the luxury of doing an MBA. You're experimenting with things. Don't just take classes. Same as when we're in undergrad, but I think we have a maturity by the time we reach MBA, right? Go take something in a class you would never think about exploring because you never know, you might actually love that. And that was the same for also what jobs you pursue. You never know, you might actually love that. This is a chance to really potentially make a change. Or you already knew if you wanted to go back to enterprise software, or you could, right? So why not challenge yourself?
Absolutely. And I love that. And now that you're a founder of a company, you know, I feel like you really have to have that spirit of always critically thinking and assessing, where am I? What do I want to do? What am I passionate about? And that like continual adaptation and thinking what's current and what problems need to be addressed. I think that's just really important. So let's talk about that a little bit. Now you're a CEO and founder. When did you first think about being a CEO and leading a company?
You know, I think, you know, to be frank among friends, right, I think I always was thinking about that. I never thought I'd have the chance to do it for my own company. I thought it would be a role that I'd grow into. And being a first-time founder and first-time CEO sometimes, you know, doesn't always jive well together, but you learn and you grow from it. And, you know, being a founder for me was a bit of a surprise. I don't write code. I learned early that I lacked the art to write code. Sure, I could do it, but also I can finger paint. Doesn't mean I'm going to be a painter, right? But I'm a technical person. And through my career path, I found how I could leverage both pieces of being technical, but also being strategic. That had allowed me to develop a career where I identified market problems and came up with solutions and built the teams to go execute on that. And so as one of our investors told me recently, they're like, of course you ended up starting your own company. Hey, you've done that for other companies throughout your career. And I think there's a really big misconception. And it's one of the things that does definitely impact, I think, women founders, is that you have to be a coder to start a company. Well, not that writing code's easy, but also all the other skill sets in running a company are very hard too. So you can always go fill that gap, and understanding the market is the hardest thing. And even harder is making people care about the thing that you're doing. And so I think everybody has the opportunity to found a company. The question is, what's your skill set? And then you go and recruit and build a team around the holes that you have.
I love that. And I want to talk a little bit about what makes women great leaders, because I think sometimes there is this misconception that maybe companies that aren't as open-minded. And I know I've personally experienced sometimes where there are organizations that kind of view women as more of the workers instead of the leaders. And I've even seen cases where I can think of where they've hired a man for a leadership role, just thinking because as a male, they have more authority. And it's not something that, you know, it's not because they're a bad person. It's just kind of one of those systemic kind of cultural things that I think needs to be changed. And that's one reason why we're doing these podcasts and interviews, is to showcase these issues and talk about them. So let's talk about that. What makes women great leaders? And, you know, why would we like to see more women in those leadership roles?
You know, I think there are a couple of things that make women great leaders. One is, I think we're a little bit pragmatic, right? You know, I look at this, especially from a startup perspective, and I'll say, honestly, I was actually coached at the beginning of this. People said, you got to stop focusing on the details and the pragmatism of your business, because you're a good leader. You're going to build a good business plan. They know that. You got to sell the big picture. But I think that that comes into play, right? You know, I'll talk about our own experience throughout COVID. Being pragmatic said, okay, at the beginning of COVID, what's the advantage a startup has in this situation? We're agile. We threw out our hiring plan, said, what can we go do to build a team? Because we were just about to scale as we went into March. And what can we do that's different to go build out a team while still be making sure we're protecting the company? So we went into colleges, and people had job hiring processes freeze, right? And we said, we can still go move forward on that. You know, I think the other thing, and I think this is going to play a huge role as we look at the future of work as well, is we're empathetic. Not that men aren't, right? These are things that men have too, but I think these are some really defining characteristics. My COO is actually on a board that helps place women that have had some abuse in jobs to help get their careers started. And a stat she shared with me recently, it's estimated that about 90% of women are experienced to have some kind of trauma, whether it's harassment, physical or verbal abuse. And so having a woman in a leadership position conveys an unspoken de facto empathy and understanding, and makes it easier for people to bring themselves to work, to share what's going on outside. So as we're looking towards more empathy-driven cultures, and that being what people are looking for, I think that's something where women are really going to shine in terms of leading our companies forward.
Great. And let's talk about Wobby. And what are your priorities? What are you working on at Wobby?
Yeah. You know, as a startup, everything's a priority, right? Let me level set though. So the area we focused on is how to integrate security into development. For so long, as companies adopted DevOps pipelines, just sort of getting into the philosophy of DevOps, right? Efficiency and more regular commitments, get code out so we can continue to iterate on it. A lot of the security industry focused so much on trying to speed up the tools to fit in. And what Wobby said was, it's not about speed, it's about efficiency. How do we make sure we're doing the right thing at the right time? So we orchestrate the process and program of application security to make sure the right information populates into the development team at the right time. You know, we've been growing for the better part of 4 years. And so now we're in a place where our customers have automated their processes. And now our priorities are about more forward-looking. How do I predict the impact of application security on my development pipeline? How can I more effectively empower my development teams so that my security teams can get away from the tactical day-to-day management of it to how do I strategize? You know, something we'll be rolling out later this year is, did a change happen in the application that's going to impact my policies? Our current geopolitical world is a great example right now. Is something happening on the outside world that's going to make me change my policies? And right now, security professionals are so torn between the tactical, how do I make sure it's just getting done every day, and the strategic. And, you know, really over the next 6 months, you'll start to see us roll out new functionality to allow the security professionals to move and focus on the strategic every day by empowering the development with just that day-to-day information.
Nice. And can you tell me, I love the name Wabi. Tell me a little bit about Wabi and the concept behind that name.
So if you're sitting, if I was sitting in my office today, you'd actually see a poster behind me that was the inspiration. And what it is, it's the definition of the Japanese concept of wabi-sabi, which says, let us accept imperfections and the things we create as a step towards enlightenment. And we realized, we picked the name after we already sort of knew what the platform was. So what we're asking security to do is a very foreign concept to security, which lives in a binary world of bad and good, right? Versus development that ships imperfect code every day. You know, it's sort of this world of gray of what's good enough today and what can be fixed later. And so where the name Wabi came from is to say, let's accept the fact that our code is imperfect, and therefore perfect security is about embracing that imperfection and making sure we have all the right controls in place. Sometimes that's acknowledging I didn't follow a policy and I signed off on it, or we put in a mitigating control. And so that's where that came from. It said, rather than trying to make everything perfect, right? Because perfection is the enemy of done. And if we tried to have perfect security installed in every application, it would take 6 months to develop a little world. So let's just focus on making sure we're following the right processes and procedures to develop secure code. And exceptions are a piece of that as well. It's okay.
Yeah, and I noticed too that a lot of your background in your roles is very customer service focused. And can you talk about that a little bit? I find that the best CEOs are they're like laser focused on customers and helping them through their pains and solving their issues. Is that something that drives you? And can you talk a little bit about that?
100%, right? If we don't have customers, what's the point of having a product? You know, they're the ones in the trenches experiencing these things every day. And if you hear somebody say that they have a pain, whether more broadly around the problem you're solving or just with your product specifically, chances are they're not the only ones saying that, right? So you've really got to pay attention to them. It was actually the reason that I actually spent the majority of the first year without an actual physical product. I spent that time with customer advisory boards, or really at the time prospect advisory boards, working through it. I just think if you're not listening to your customers and prospects in the market constantly, you're missing out on that opportunity to not just satisfy their problem today, but make sure you're future-proofing them, right? You're going along on the journey with them. Because anybody that says, you know, oh, I know what's best for my customer, you're just going to bypass them. I think especially in our industry, right? Our customers deal with very complex issues in cybersecurity world. And then especially as we get into application security, those software and security are living, breathing things. And if we know what's coming tomorrow, you know, we should laugh at anybody that says that.
Absolutely. So what challenges have you faced either now or at other stages in your career? And can you share any ways that you can overcome them, can help our audience as they might face similar challenges?
Yeah, you know, I think like everybody, right, there's challenges both internal and external, right? You know, the reality is that women only receive less than 2.5% of VC funding. You get into the cybersecurity industry. And when we did our fundraising announcement, I did a little research. And in the second half of 2021, there were more transactions and dollars that went to new cybersecurity deals than had gone to all women in cybersecurity. You know, you have to be more creative. We talked about what makes women great leaders sometimes is that you have to be a little bit more creative and do more with less sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you're facing that headwind. somebody gave me this great advice, and I initially sort of like swept it under the rug going, what do you mean? And it was be vulnerable. I especially thought it was a little sexist the first time I heard it. Mm-hmm. And I was, because there's that soft component to it. Don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Then you start to roll out and you realize, oh, the whole point isn't to go sit on a couch and cry. Mm-hmm. It's to say, hey, let me open myself up to my network, to my people, mm-hmm. and say, here's my problem. Because together, even if they don't quite understand it, but together we can solve more there rather than trying to do it alone.
Yep. Sounds good. Yeah. And also just asking for help when you need it. I always tell people, if you need help, just ask. Right. It's always one of those things that sometimes it's hard for people to do. What other advice would you have for other women CEOs or aspiring CEOs?
Yeah, I think there are two things, for other aspiring CEOs, whether they're women or not, I do think one of the things that's been most helpful is building that network. And mm-hmm. and you don't have to think about it quite so formally. I think some people go out and say, Melinda, will you be my mentor? And maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. And that's not how the best mentors come up. I like to think of them as a personal board of advisors. Mm-hmm. And when you go out and build your network that way, one, remember, nobody's doing a favor in expectation of something being returned, right? And I think that was one of the things that took me a little later in my career as I was helping the next generation come up. I realized like I wasn't expecting anything from them. They asked for 30 minutes of my time. And of course, because somebody had done it for me before. So reach out, right? Those are the people that you'll go to when you have those questions, when you have those opportunities. And I think the other thing is don't think that the path here is linear. I thought I had one path to being a CEO and that being a founder was never going to be something that I could do because I didn't code. Sometimes if you get into the, I have to do A before B and then to get to C, you're going to miss out on some great opportunities. For me, I thought, as I mentioned, I was going to get my MBA a lot earlier in my career. And if I'd focused solely on that, I would have missed out on the amazing opportunity to have my company send me to Australia for a year to work, to set up our business unit down there after an acquisition, right? Those kinds of opportunities don't come along every day. And when you get two blinders on about, I have to do it in this particular way, you're going to miss out on those great opportunities. And so sometimes just be willing to go through the journey.
Yep. And I know you were interested in cyber early from your career. What can you tell people about why this industry is so great?
Oh man, because it's a different challenge every day, right? You touch so many different lives. And I literally mean lives, right? Whether you're dealing on the enterprise side, on the consumer side, it really does have an impact. And I think what's really cool and what has been a myth about getting into the cybersecurity industry is, oh, I've got to go be a hacker, right? No, we all have skill sets, especially because cybersecurity impacts everybody. There's a lot of different angles you can get into where your skill set can help solve this big problem of cybersecurity. And the big problem of cybersecurity is only growing and becoming more complex as we use more technology.
So thanks, Brittany, so much for being on our show. It was great talking with you. And thanks for tuning into our podcast. Hope to see you next time. And make sure you sign up for more great stories from women in cybersecurity.